You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Both of us were extremely frustrated just with the few minutes that we were listening to Democrat after Democrat just
lie.
Well, lie, yes. And your comment to me is well taken, that they shouldn't be allowed to lie in that format. They shouldn't be allowed to lie in the House of the Senate. They shouldn't be allowed to lie in basically a hearing, a trial, with a judge present, especially the Supreme Court justice. And why is that? Why is it that in this type of a trial, they're pretty much allowed to say anything that they want, true or untrue, and it just is not stopped by anyone?
Well, you know, Lynn, I'm going to have to plead my ignorance on this, but I'm no different than any other American that's out there. I wish I could tell you that I was a procedural expert in the way that they run an impeachment hearing or a trial or whatever the heck you want to call it. But this just goes back to what I was saying in one of our earlier conversations with respect to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And apparently that's not his job. All right. Now, he was quoted earlier on when he was going through Senate confirmation hearings. So we're talking about, you know, a few years ago, because now he's the Chief Justice. And he said, when he was asked, that the role of the judge is to make sure that everybody plays fairly. And this is clearly not fair. This is not objective whatsoever. There's no objective evidence, or else they would have put it on. It's speculation, it's misrepresentation, it's out and out lying. And why you have a system set up where, for God's sakes, you're using the Supreme Court justice as basically your trier of fact, your hearing officer, whatever the heck you want to call this guy, and he does absolutely nothing from stopping either side from telling lies and misrepresentations. I just don't get it. And I think people, if they're like me, they're angry about that.
Well, I think that they are. And we were extremely frustrated, like I said, in listening to the radio. You know, one of the things that has really bothered me about listening to this whole process of impeachment, first of all, we pretty much knew where it was going to end up. So I'm not sure why they went down this road in the first place, but there are a few people that are just obsessive about Donald Trump, and I think that that's the reason why. So they tried to find something to manufacture to hopefully hurt him for the upcoming election. I don't think that that worked.
Yeah, but it's politics, okay? And that's why we have an electorate. We have an electorate that if you don't like the president, you can vote him out of office. I couldn't stand Obama, and I couldn't stand Joe Biden, and I still can't stand either one of them. But my course of action was at the ballot box and voting them both out of office.
Right.
I think they weaponize, and I think it's a huge mistake, they weaponize the impeachment process, and in weaponizing it for political gain, what they've done is, I think they've destroyed it. They've belittled it. They don't make it as important as it should be. And I think now that that's the new goalpost, I think we have a lot to watch out for in America and be worried about in the future.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. But the thing that really bothered me about this whole impeachment process was the words that were used by the people that were not friendly to the president. And one of the words that they continued to say, and one of the lies that they continued to say, was that President Trump was trying to get Zelensky to have a sham investigation and find sham problems against Joe Biden and against his son. And that word sham really bothers me because they used it over and over again. It must be that they had a list of talking points because they all used the same words that they were trying to get people to buy into. And sham was one of them. And there's nowhere, anywhere in evidence, nor anywhere in conversations that happened, was there anything that was asked to be a sham or a false investigation into the Bidens.
Well, you know, one of the things that I see, and it's been a theme that's been going on and on and on, is you can always tell when they've had a break. Okay, so they had a weekend break. And so what they do, and I'm speculating, of course, but it sure seems like it to me, what they do is they get together and they plan the strategy of language. Okay, a good friend of mine who's a former district attorney, and he said it's a war. It's the use of rhetoric. Okay, so in the trial, I can't remember what his quote, but it's a great quote. But he goes, arguing in court is the use of rhetoric as a weapon. And so that's what they're doing when you hear the same one word repeated over and over and over again. And the same thing you see with the media. You know, so, you know, they're talking about stuff and then they'll switch over to the nightly news later on at the end of the evening. And all of the media outlets that are liberal media outlets are using the same rhetoric over it. Because it's like a talking point. It's like the Democrats give the mainstream media their talking points for that evening or the following day.
You know, here's in my mind what they did with this story. So if you had a story, Ron, about a lady is going to drive her car to the store and she's going to pick up some things to eat. Okay. They made that story that this woman was speeding crazily down the street on the way to the store, and she's going to the store to meet a drug dealer and pick up some drugs while she's there, and then she's going to pick up some alcohol, and then she's going to pick up some, you know, cigarettes and, you know, all these types of things. And she's going to drive crazily back home, and she's going to go home and give those things to her kids. That's what they did with this story. They took something that was rather benign to start with,
which was the telephone call,
and they made it into something, giving it intent that was never proven to be there.
Well, they tried to give it life. That's what they wanted to do. They wanted to give it life, that it was collusion, that it was corruption, that Trump did it for self-serving reasons, to take out a political candidate.
But you have to have evidence of that. And there was no evidence that it had anything to do with Joe Biden being a political candidate. It had to do with, really, with Donald Trump being a political candidate in 2016. And he's still actually angry about them trying to take him out the way that they did, which has progressed over the 3 years he's been in office and has never stopped. So to make all of these allegations and put a character into an event that was never there to begin with is what I object to.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I said this all along, that if everything was, I guess, accurate. In other words, objectively accurate, there was no evidence, there never was any evidence, this entire thing by the Democrats were made up, that Trump would get acquitted on this. And that's exactly what's going to happen, okay? He's going to be acquitted, but the thing that scares me is, will the poor president of the United States ever get to move on? Because, like I said, they've taken this entire impeachment thing and they've weaponized it. And there are no guarantees that after the election, and I think President Trump, as I've said every time we've had a conversation, I think Trump is going to win this election in 2020 by greater numbers than when he was against Hillary Clinton. But the whole impeachment thing looms large over the president's head. It's almost like a sort of Damocles hanging over his head. But I don't think Donald Trump cares. I think he just wants to keep moving forward. He's doing phenomenal work under tremendous pressure for the American people.
Well, and I believe that we just learned that he signed a new order regarding sex trafficking, which, you know, anything that we can do to help those people, I'm all for.
And he's also signed today as well a $1.8 billion fund for autism and autism
research.
Oh,
that's wonderful.
So, I mean, who's doing this? I mean, the other guys had their opportunities to do all of this. And who's bringing all this stuff forward but the President of the United States, who's under tremendous pressure right now? And, you know, after this is over, then, you know, he's got to run for office.
Well, and not only that, but after this is over, Nadler and Schiff have vowed to continue the fight and go ahead and call Bolton and, you know, other witnesses to come and testify so that they can continue this fight. They will not let this up. And, you know, I'm reminded every day that they do this, that while they're doing this, we don't have an infrastructure bill from them, and we don't have an updated medical system from them, and we don't have things that we as Americans have been waiting for that are important to us, because these people have Trump derangement syndrome and won't let it go.
No, I totally agree with you. And like I've said before, if they would not pursue the President of the United States as much as they pursue him, I understand the politics. I understand the opposition party. I also understand that Democrats are pretty darn concerned about the upcoming 2020 election and what Democratic candidate is going to support them.
Well,
right?
I mean,
who? In other words, who are they going to support as their Democratic candidate against President Trump? And I think if I was a Democrat, I'd be pretty darn concerned, because I think they're all a bunch of do-nothing idiots. They haven't done... I mean, you name one person that's running against Donald Trump that's accomplished anything in their career as a politician. I can't think of a single one. Certainly not Joe Biden.
Well, what they've accomplished is that they've all become wealthy by having this career. I mean, extremely wealthy by having this career, and not always through legal means. The thing is that the Democrats have had 3 years to put a candidate up there that will resonate with America, and they haven't been able to do it. Out of all the people, some 20 people that they had running, they cannot get one of those people to resonate with the American people.
Well, you know, I'm going to make it worse, because they knew the day that President Obama got reelected that he was going to be a lame duck president. And there's 4 years.
Right, so 7 years.
That they had to start thinking about, okay, what are we going to do when Barack Obama is gone? So there's 4 years to think about who's going to step forward, who are they going to groom,
You're forgetting.
You understand what I'm saying?
You're forgetting. Hillary was their shoe-in.
Well, yeah, but she was damaged so much in that last election, and she's done so much to damage herself.
They never thought
since.
About it. They thought that she was going to be crowned.
Yeah, but when they found out that she wasn't going to be crowned, then you've got 4 years to think about.
I don't think they found out till election night.
I totally agree with you there. But do you understand what I mean? I mean, after Trump won the election and Hillary was out, do you think, seriously, do you think that the Democrats said to themselves, well, we're going to run Hillary Clinton in 2020?
No, I didn't think. I didn't think that they would do that. But I do think that they had 3 years to find people that were, like I said, that would resonate with the American people. Not these people that are so far to the left that only resonate with a small segment of the population. I'm surprised they resonate with anybody, but for some reason they do.
Well, did you ever think that a socialist communist like Bernie Sanders was going to be one of the main candidates? I mean, yes, he ran in 2016, but did you think he was going to come back and he was going to be just as popular, if not more popular, than in 2016, a socialist communist?
I think that that is the result of what we've done in our schools, Ron. And I think that he's getting the young people who have been brainwashed by our educational system, and that is on purpose. And I think that this is going to be the result of that.
Well, you know, and then we've got Elizabeth Warren, and I mean, she's been a fraud, you know, since the get-go, you know, with the whole thing with the Native American thing, and I'm a Native American, and then the DNA showed that she, that I, as an Italian, I've got more Indian in me than she does. And just some of the craziness stuff. And who's coming out of the woodwork now? And now we get former Mayor Bloomberg that's, you know, buy his way into the election.
Oh, he absolutely is buying his way into the election. They changed the DNC rules for him to be in the debates. That's just not fair to everybody else.
Well, I think the Democrats have got a lot to worry about. I feel very confident that President Trump is gonna finish out this term doing marvelous things. I personally think he's gonna run circles around these Democratic candidates, and I can hardly wait for the primaries to be over so that we can see who he's gonna run against. And I'm telling you what, I think he's gonna take that person to the tool shed, you know.
Well, I think so, and I think his record absolutely speaks for itself. And anything else is just a distraction that they want to put up to, you know, try to get people to not listen or to not vote for him.
Well, I just would wish, and it's not going to happen, I'm not going to get my wish, but I would just wish that once this is done, the Democrats in the Congress take a deep breath and say, hey, we better do something here because we've got elections coming up and we had better start moving the United States of America forward and try to compete with Donald Trump, who's just done amazing things as president of the United States. Like I said, under all this pressure, some people may not like Donald Trump. He's very bombastic. I have times where, you know, I want to scream at him, don't do it, Donald, you know, and he does it. But my God, I think he is going to go down in history as one of America's very best presidents.
I agree with you. And if you click those sparkly red high heels of yours together, you just may get your wish.
How about some coffee?
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Get your thoughts on the coronavirus and something that really concerns me because it seems to be spreading extremely fast, and it seems that every day that we get news that the death toll goes up quite a bit, not just a little bit, but quite a bit every single day.
Well, you know, I think it's going to continue to rise exponentially. It's probably going to double. Some days it may even triple. And I'm thinking that the Chinese are really holding back on the numbers. I don't think they have control of this thing at all. I wouldn't blame anybody for not having control over something like that. I mean, when you take a look at the billions and billions of people that are in China, and I mean, just the numbers that they talk about in that, like, the Wuhan district or the city of Wuhan, and they're talking about 11 million people in one town. And they're talking about the Chinese government attempting to quarantine 50 million people. And the mayor of Wuhan said today that he believed that 5 million people had already fled the city to different parts of China. It scares the bejesus out of me.
Well, and we've we've got more and more. I mean, just one here and there, but it's one here and there.
We're in California right now. There are 6 cases.
No, I believe there's 9 now.
Oh, see, there you go. Yeah. So it was 6 yesterday, and it's 9 now, which it increased 30% in one day.
Yeah, and I'm not sure of that number, but it seems to me like I read that today. And these people are not dying in the U.S. with this.
Correct.
As
we
of yet.
I don't believe we've had a single death yet in the United States.
But they do have it. And if you know, what I get concerned about, Ron, is people on airplanes. We fly all the time. That air is recirculated. Somebody, and if you've ever sat next to somebody that's coughing the whole way,
oh,
it's,
I hate that.
Yeah, if they're behind you or next to you, even in front of you, it's very disconcerting because you really have no way to get away from it, right?
You're absolutely right, and that's truly scary. Because I believe the incubation period, what are they saying, is 2 weeks?
2 weeks, right.
So a person could get completely contaminated and not even show symptoms of the coronavirus for 2 weeks. Can you imagine all the places that a person could go in 2 weeks, especially if they were traveling from one end of the country to the next and going through all those terminals and all the people that they make contact with and all the people in an airplane that are breathing that recirculated air from a person contaminated with the coronavirus. Did you see the movie years and years ago? What was the name of that movie?
What was it?
About the virus. And it was...
It was an epidemic. It was
something
like that,
though. It was
something
like that.
Yeah.
Did you see that? And
yes.
They showed... Remember the scene in the movie theater where the person was coughing and you could see the germs?
Yes,
oh,
yes,
my God,
yes.
That scared the,
yes.
Scared the but Jesus out of me.
Yeah.
But that's exactly... I mean, that wasn't that far off, actually.
No, and that's exactly what it is. And the other thing that they just came out with, they have a whole new theory that before you actually get the symptoms with the fever and the cough, people have been reporting that they have diarrhea and they have found the virus in their stool. So that means that they can pass that by sitting on a public toilet or, you know, some way in, like that as well. Or, you know, just all the things that go along with going to the bathroom, touching things and wiping things. And, you know, so you can really...
And people that don't clean their hands
in
the bathrooms. I see that all the time when I'm in the airports. The people that don't wash their hands and everything, it just drives me nuts.
Well, just think about restaurant workers. I mean, you know, this virus seems to be very easily spread. And it seems that if they catch it early enough and you're not somebody with already a compromised immune system, you can probably have the virus and survive it. But lots of people are compromised with, you know, people have other things. They may have cancer. They may have, you know, a kidney disease. They may have,
exactly.
Yeah, something.
Exactly.
They might be diabetic, which tends to exacerbate symptoms. So, you know, I mean, it is something very much to be concerned about. I also worry about it getting into the homeless population and spreading like wildfire there. The other interesting aspect of this is that where it came from was this market area, an open market area where they sell dead wild animals for food.
Seafood and meat.
Well, okay. Sure, but things like snakes out of the wild.
And bats.
Bats.
I mean, the Chinese people eat crazy foods. Now, I love Chinese food, and I've tried some very, very interesting, diverse Chinese foods. But, I mean, they eat stuff that Americans would never touch. They eat cats, they eat dogs, they eat bats. They eat strange little birds, you know, stuff like that. And they just go out in the wild and they catch those things and they bring them to those markets. And I'm telling you, there's no... And of course, they don't have an FDA. They don't have a Food and Drug Administration or anything to vet the stuff that they bring into these markets. And I'm thinking that's where the doctors are saying this came from.
Well, their theory, if it holds, is that it probably came from the bats because they make a bat soup.
Oh, geez.
And the bats are notorious virus carriers they don't get the disease, but they carry the disease.
Well, like rabies and stuff like that.
Yes.
Exactly.
All kinds of viruses and diseases. So they feel that that would be the most likely place where this happened. Now, it is amazing to me how far across the world and how many countries this virus is in at this time, which tells you that people travel all over and they end up here and there. And, I mean, it is all over the world, maybe not in big numbers at this point in time, but all over the world. And the last thing that I want to say, and I know it's your issue as well, the reports really are that they are hiding the numbers. And, you know, they didn't report this when it first came out, and they didn't consider it a big deal, so they let it go. And hence, a lot of people did leave the area, and now it's spreading.
Well, you know, this isn't the first time. The reason that's that concern of mine is because this is not the first time that the Chinese government has held back on numbers. They've done that with influenza, a couple of different influenza viruses that have been deadly. They held back on the numbers. I think they're holding back on the numbers on this one. And the other thing is, and I think a couple of other medical experts are saying this, and this is where I'm getting this from, and I absolutely agree with it, is that the government can't get a handle on it. It's moving so quickly, and the hospitals are so full, they're so inundated with people, and I've seen the pictures of the giant medical camps in Wuhan that they've made, that people are not going into the hospitals because there's no room for them, and they're going home, and they're spreading it amongst their family members, and they're dying in their homes. And the Chinese government is not able to collect those bodies because they are just in such disarray.
Yeah, this is a tragic situation, and I do think it is a global concern, and I think that we all need to be very concerned. And, you know, I know for me, I'm not one of those people that, you know, compulsively washes my hands all day long. And I'm making sure that I wash my hands several times a day now, regardless of if I feel I need to or not, right. Just because I understand that I'm touching doorknobs, I'm touching telephones, I'm touching, you know, car handles, I'm touching credit cards and things that just are so...
Well, things that other people have touched.
Yes, right? But something that we do as a matter of course of our day, every single day, you don't even think about it. Right. Now I'm thinking about it.
Oh, no, I totally get it. And I think, you know, rather than causing any panic or anything, it's you need to be self-aware. You need to be aware of your surroundings. If you're seeing people are coughing and things like that, obviously move away from those people. If you feel comfortable wearing a mask, then you wear a mask. You ought to have a bunch of wipes with you all the time, and you should use those liquid hand cleaners.
Right,
those,
hand sanitizers.
Antibacterial hand sanitizers is as often as you can. Wipe everything down. You go to the supermarket, just don't put your hands on the cart. Use your wipe for that. Be careful what you touch. And I think you do the best that you can do under those circumstances.
Well, and if the worst happens and you develop symptoms, then, you know, go get it checked
don't put those symptoms
before
off.
Before it gets bad.
Don't automatically assume that you just have a cold or you have influenza. Make sure that you go see a doctor.
Well, Ron, when the Super Bowl was on, there was a couple commercials that I took a lot of interest in. The first one was by President Trump or you know, on behalf of President Trump, and it was Alice Marie Johnson, who was the grandmother that was released from jail on his First Step Prison Reform Act.
And that was the gal that had the drug trafficking charges laid against her, and she was in prison for
a very long time.
I think 15 years or something like that.
A very long time.
Right.
Actually, much longer than that.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Really?
And so I really enjoyed that commercial. And then came on a commercial that was sponsored by the NFL, and come to find out that also...
another group by the name of Inspire Change Initiative.
Right, which is Jay-Z and Beyonce's group.
Well, it's... I think Jay-Z has got a partnership with the NFL, and the NFL has joined in partnership with this organization, this nonprofit by the name of Inspire Change Initiative. And Inspire Change is a program where the NFL awards grants. And they've chosen six different social justice organizations that emphasize, you know, things like education and economic development. But the one that interests me, of course, is police community relations and criminal justice reform. So the Inspire Change Initiative was launched about a year ago with $25 million in grants to give it out to these, you know, these grassroots organizations. And I've looked at several of them, and at least most of the ones that I've looked at are fairly well-known organizations. The United Negro College Fund is one, and I think we all know about the UNCF, and then the Dream Corps. And then there's a new one called Alabama Appleseed, which is like criminal justice reform. And then there's one called City Year, which is a student support organization for minority students to get them, you know, through school and get them up into college and everything. There's an organization called Community Justice Exchange. And this one I'm still looking into, but basically it funds for National Bail Fund, the National Bail Fund Network. And then there's the Martin Luther King Center for Nonviolent Social Change and the National Urban League. Okay? So, you know, those are some fairly decent organizations. Like I said, I don't know about the Community Justice Exchange, but I'm going to look into it. Now, one of the partners of the Inspire Change Initiative is the Players Coalition. And they were the ones that put forth the commercial that was in the Super Bowl.
Okay. Well, what the commercial was basically, just to paraphrase it, it basically was saying that too many black men are getting killed by police officers, and so that they are looking to change that paradigm. And what bothered me about that, just living with you and knowing what I do know about police officers being murdered, about black men being murdered by police officers, about black men being murdered by other black men, and all of those statistics, what they're saying and what they're portraying is a really unfair portrayal of law enforcement.
Oh, no, it's absolutely, you know, a false narrative. So I went on to the organization's website right after we had watched that commercial on the Super Bowl. As a matter of fact, while you guys were watching the commercial on the Super Bowl, I'm working my phone and I'm looking up Inspire Change Initiative and the Players Coalition. And when I get onto their website, the Players Coalition has a couple of different goals. So they had two basic goals. Number one, to end racial disparity and criminalization of poverty in policing and criminal justice. And that's interesting language. That's interesting rhetoric. I've heard it before with like Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. when I wrote my book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. And then the second goal is to establish greater trust between the police and the community, and having a significant impact on basically what they refer to as police violence. And they threw out some statistics with zero references. And that always should make people worry. Okay, you should always question statistics that are not vetted. And so when I looked at the statistics, and I wrote them down, and I'm just going to quote them. They said that in 2017, police killed 1,147 people. And out of that, 149 unarmed people were killed. And their stats said that if you're a black man, you're three times more likely to be killed by the police. And you're almost 3.5 times more likely to be shot by the police. All right? And that's pure malarkey. Okay?
And
pure, completely false statistics.
And my question to you, when we were driving to work, was to give you a homework assignment and say, I don't think that that's right, Ron, so get the right stats, because I know that more police officers are killed by black men than black men are killed by police officers.
By far.
And there are far more black men in the country and far less police officers. So how does that statistic work?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that
question.
Well,
I mean, seriously, it bothers me.
Well, no, I mean, and I'll give myself a plug. I'll just be right up front. You know, in the book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, I researched all the statistics for 2 years, and I went back for several years, and all of the references are in that book because I made no opinions. It's a completely factual, forensic book. And so I did go back into the book and pull out some statistics for you. So remember that in the Players Coalition website, they said that 1,147 people were killed by the police in 2017. And that's not true at all. Because let me just give you some statistics, for instance. Between 2009 and 2013, that's 4 years, people that died at the hands of police of all colors, okay, was 1,491 people. So they're saying in 2017 there were 1,147, and actually in a four-year period, not a one-year period, there was about those same statistics over 4 years, not 1 year, okay? But here's what's interesting about those statistics from 2009 to 2013, and I'm just using what I pulled out of the book because I've got all the references. 32% of those people were black males, but 61% of those people were white males. So right off the bat, there's statistics that you're three times more likely to be killed by the police if you're black is false, because twice as many white people than black people die at the hands of police in all different uses of force. Okay? And the next thing is that an average of only 120 black males or a year, or one out of 173,000 black males die as a result of any police use of force. That's one out of 173,000 black men ever die as a result of a police use of force. Now compare that to 2,369 black males that died between 2009 and 2013 per year in vehicle accidents, and over 2,500 that died each year during that four-year period as a result of suicides. So here are the statistics people need to keep in mind. Not the Players Coalition, which is completely false, but the real statistics that anybody can look up, and they can certainly get my book and they can look those up. And here's what they are. A black male is 35 times more likely to be killed not by a police officer, but by another black male. 35 times more likely to be killed by another black male. They are 20 times more likely to die in a car accident than to be killed by a police officer, or they're 20 times more likely to die from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, a suicide, than killed by a police officer, and they're 21 times more likely to be killed in a self-defense shooting than by a police officer. In other words, black males and other males who might be white or Asian or any other color, they kill more black males than police officers do, and black males kill more black males in self-defense shootings than are killed by police. Black males kill 9 times as many police officers as police officers kill black males. Those are the real vetted statistics. And that's what makes me so angry about the NFL that gets in a partnership with the Players Coalition and does nothing to vet the BS statistics that the Players Coalition comes out with.
And first of all, that's amazing. You always amaze me with your statistics.
It's what I do for a living. I mean, I track all these officer-involved shootings throughout the country. I'm involved in a lot of them.
And Jay-Z and his wife, Beyonce, sat down during the
playing of the national anthem.
Yes,
but that's not to be surprised. And let me say one other thing, okay? For just for a second, Beyonce and I wrote an entire chapter about the Carters. Okay, so Jay-Z Carter and Beyonce. I wrote an entire chapter in the book. They donated $33 million to Black Lives Matter, whose radical revolutionaries after the Ferguson shooting incident with Michael Brown and Officer Darren Wilson, they burned black businesses, okay? And Jay-Z and his wife Beyonce donated $33 million to those radical revolutionaries and Black Lives Matter.
Wouldn't it be more powerful for them to create a really good image for young black people, like black youth, to stay in school, to get educated, to learn how to do the right thing if stopped by the police instead of doing the wrong thing, which ends up in a shooting at times? Teach them the right ways to live. Teach them to, you know, not make babies, you know, at 14 years old out of wedlock and all those types of things. Teach dads to stay with their families. Teach the right things that will take those communities to a higher level and, you know, to have a better life instead of trying to foster distrust for our law enforcement.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You know, Linda, you're 100% right. There are so many things that high-profile professional athletes can do, especially minority athletes, where they could have a very positive impact in their communities. Going into the schools, telling kids that police are their friends, telling kids not to resist the police, not to show disrespect for the police, not to be in gangs, not to take drugs, not to drink alcohol, not to use guns, not to have violence and guns settle their differences, to stay in school, to get a good education, if they have, you know, sports, athletic talent, to use that athletic talent to further their life, to make their lives better. There are so many things that professional black athletes could do to help their own communities instead of forming a false narrative coalition like the Players Coalition.
No, I totally agree with you. And you know what? The thing is that you and I haven't watched football for a very long time.
That was the first game that I have watched in years, since Colin Kaepernick took a knee.
Yes. And I was disappointed. I was happy to see nobody taking a knee on the field. I was not happy to see Jay-Z and Beyonce. America has been more than good to those people.
Oh my God, yeah. And twice convicted felon, drug dealer. There's so much hypocrisy with this guy. He sold crack. That's how he started his life. He was a drug dealer, a crack salesman, selling poison to children and adults in his own community. How disgraceful. Okay, and so now he's some sort of social justice warrior?
Well,
Is that what I'm supposed to believe?
It makes sense why he doesn't like the police.
Of course not.
He doesn't like the police, and this is his personal vendetta. The thing is, he's hurting people with it. And 130 million people saw that ad on TV, and they don't know that it's false, and they don't know that the figures are false, and they figure if it came from the NFL that it's got to be true, and that's disingenuous.
And thanks so much for bringing that up, because that's exactly right. Okay, so a lot of people are already angry about the NFL because of people like Colin Kaepernick and these fake social justice warriors, these total hypocrites that really took market share away from the NFL. And the NFL is disgraceful because they did nothing to vet the statistics of the Players Coalition and this, this other organization, you know, that we've been, you know, talking about, the Inspire Change Initiative. I totally agree with you. I'm not saying don't have a Players Coalition. I'm not saying don't have the Inspire Change Coalition. I'm saying, for God's sakes, have some credibility, have some honesty, have some transparency. And how dare you take that opportunity to further your agenda with this police violence, officer-involved shooting. Okay? And if the police officer, and by the way, I mean, truth be told, full disclosure, I looked up the case, and the guy's doing 25 years, a plainclothes detective, for shooting a black man that was in his car when the black man pulled out a gun and thought that the plainclothes officer, who there's a question of whether he ever identified himself, I don't think he did, that's why he's doing prison time, initiated this thing. But here again, he was adjudicated, he was tried, and he was convicted. And we have a lot of transparency in police work. And you know me, Linda, I work really good plaintiff cases for people of color. I take all different cases. I've got no dog in the fight. I'm a factual forensic expert. But I cannot stand it when you get people telling lies in front of 130 million Americans that don't know better.
No, I totally agree. I want to say one more thing about the Super Bowl. Despite the fact that I'm not a big football fan anymore, I really enjoyed that game. And what I really, really enjoyed was the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, who, again, he's a 24-year-old black man, and he exemplifies just somebody who is on the right track. And what I admire about what he did in that game is the Chiefs were down in the score, and it was 6 minutes to go, and they were down quite a bit.
I think they were down 10 or 11 points.
Well, they were down more than a touchdown. Yeah,
more than a touchdown.
Yeah, so they, and we thought, there's just no time. There's no time.
I was pretty confident the Niners were going to win.
Yeah, and but I kept saying it was doable. It's doable, but they needed some sort of a Hail Mary, you know. And boy, did they make it! They made that Hail Mary. And he never gave up, and he never stopped. And that is the epitome to me of a hero.
And afterwards, he got down on a knee with several players and the Kansas City Chiefs, and they prayed together. They prayed together. And you know what this guy does on his off-duty time? He builds homes for veterans.
Oh, my gosh. I did not know that.
That is a role model. That's what they should be doing. If you're going to have a Players Coalition, if you're going to have this Inspire Change organization, for God's sakes, man it up with people like this quarterback and not people like Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Yes, he inspired me. And I didn't see the last two things you talked about because I went to get the laundry. But I, you know, just I really, really enjoyed watching him. And I think he was inspiring.
Yeah. And it was tough for me really to distract myself because I was actually looking at Shakira during the halftime show.
I can't blame you there. Well, I had a friend call me while I was at work, and let me know the news about Rush Limbaugh announcing that he had advanced lung cancer.
I heard that today.
And it's devastating. It's just very devastating. He's somebody that's been on the radio forever. He's a patriot. He's fights for America. He fights for our Constitution. He fights for unborn children. He fights for the rule of law. He fights for, you know, all the things that we believe in. And he has as long as I can remember.
You know, I remember starting to listen to Rush Limbaugh. I don't know if you know this, but he was with a radio station in Sacramento, California.
Oh, I do know that, yeah.
Okay, when he first started out, before he was with another major mm-hmm. network and then had his, you know, his own network, the EIB network.
Mm-hmm. Well, I went online to take a look at the story. And what I saw was a lot of tweets and a lot of comments from people that really shook me, Ron. They were so despicable and so evil. And probably it was probably 50% of the comments were just as evil as could be. People wishing him dead, happy that he'd be off the air, happy that he had cancer. And I got to thinking, it bothered me just a lot to think that, where are we going in America? What has happened to us that we can take an illness? Because, by the way, we're all going to die, and we're all going to die some way. So nobody's off that hook, right?
And, you know, we have close people, very close people to us that have been recently diagnosed with cancer, and it's heartbreaking to watch them go through this.
It's, you know, it's absolutely heartbreaking. And whether it's cancer or something else, you never wish somebody dead. You never wish somebody to be ill like that. You never wish that on somebody. And the thing that bothered me was, what is happening to us in America that we have become so ugly?
Well, you know, I appreciate what you did as a result of it. And I think it's the fastest article that I've ever watched you put together, and it's you know, right at the top of the chart on America Out Loud. I mean, it got immediate resonance, and you mentioned this. You know, you were talking about Rush Limbaugh. You brought it up to me. I didn't even know. I wasn't listening to the news today, and you started writing this article and submitted it to America Out Loud, and I mean, almost immediately it went to the top of the network, and so congratulations for that. But more importantly, you raised some really, really important issues that really resonated with me, and I'm sure they're going to resonate with Americans. What have we become as a society in America where we wish someone dead from a crippling disease and a painful disease like cancer?
And for what reason? Because they have a different political view than you do. That is amazing. I mean, there are people in our government right now that I seriously don't like. I would still never wish that upon them.
Nor I.
And I just think that we need to take a step back as Americans. And I blame a lot of this on our politicians, Ron, because I still say that they are like our parents, that and we're how
dysfunctional parents.
Yes, how they go, so goes the country. They need to grow up and be good examples and genuine examples, because, you know, they can come out and say, "Oh, I'm so sorry," but you know that they're not. I want to see genuineness, and I want to see people care about each other. And somewhere along the way here, we've lost that, and I just find that very sad.
So, Linda, what do you think the road backwards to healing and to changing this culture in America, where people are just so intolerant that they say the most despicable things and wish such ill on other people that they disagree with politically? Is there a way back from this?
I think we need to go back to community and churches and things like that, that bring people together, things that, you know, it used to be schools too, but the schools I'm disenchanted with. But I think we've gotten away from the churches, and we've gotten away from the communities. You know, when we go to Europe, Ron, people live a little bit different way. They have these community squares, and people are out and about, and they're with each other, and they depend more on each other. We're very isolated as Americans anymore. I think we've just stopped caring about one another.
Yeah, I think when you take God out of the schools, when you replace value with secularism, the government controls the family, the government controls the state, the government controls people, when you've got a mainstream media that is clearly intolerant, the Don Lemons of the CNN, in the just insulting remarks he makes about Republicans and conservatives, while he himself is facing a civil trial for doing despicable things to another human being, just the hypocrisy and the negativity. I absolutely agree with you. People watch television, they listen to these politicians, they listen to these political pundits, and I think it fosters an increased intolerance of other people.
Yeah, you know? And that's a really good word. It is intolerance. Also, in other countries, they are more apt to stay with family throughout their lives. In other words, the grandmother's still there and play, the parents, the kids, the grandkids. Everybody is kind of lives close to each other and interacts.
They're more of a nuclear family environment. They do. And we don't have that as much in the United States.
We're very, very separated. And I just think that it's important that we get back to that and get away from this divisiveness and this hate speak about other people, especially for one small portion of their life, which is their political view.
Yeah, it's just politics, okay? It's not... nobody's trying to kill you. Nobody's trying to hurt you, and it's politics. And you have to understand that, and you have to put it in perspective. And it should always be family first, and it should be friends, and it should be building relationships, not tearing them asunder.
Yep, I agree.